Welcome to the KHSU Magazine. I'm Natalia Estrada, and I'm here today with Linda Sansbury and Jennifer Fumiko Cahill of the North Coast Journal.
Hello.
Hi.
So we've got an interesting topic today, and I would say it's about the city of Rio Del, but it's also about the struggles of Rio Del.
That's right. This is Linda, and this week's story is about Rio Del, which is, if you ever drive south, it's right next to Scotia along the Eel River. And so back in March, the bridge connecting Rio Del and Scotia was closed by Caltrans so they could repaint it, and it's been having a big impact on local businesses.
And some of those local businesses are worse off than others, right?
Yeah, that's right. So it's really important to understand kind of the geography of that region. And it's interesting from a socioeconomic view. I always like to refer people to kind of a bird's eye view of Rio Del and Scotia. So Scotia is a historic company town. It's very clean, lined streets, grids. And then if you look across the river at Rio Del is kind of this, you know, sprawling, wild town. It wasn't actually incorporated until 1965. It was originally called Wildwood, and it was a place for where the loggers went back in the 60s, 70s. There was a lot of prostitution and gambling and, wow. And everything else there.
Total yin and yang there.
Total yin and yang. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, it wasn't also a family town. There are actually a lot of Portuguese and Italian families who established, you know, their first homes there along the main drag. And it's always been kind of on the cusp of an economic resurgence, and it's been just successively hit over the last couple of decades by setback over setback. First, you know, the closure of the mills, the rerouting of Highway 101 that used to go over the bridge connecting Rio Del and Scotia. And then so most recently, the painting of the bridge has really decreased the amount of tourist traffic coming from the south.
Mm-hmm. And this is kind of like peak season, like summer is peak tourism season for Humboldt County.
Yes, it has been really difficult. And it's been especially challenging because there are a lot of new businesses in Rio Del. It's kind of established itself as a small business friendly town. Mm-hmm. And they've been working on connecting tourists who are coming off Avenue of the Giants from the south to kind of direct them into town, because it's one of the first places to stop for, you know, food and gas and everything else. And so now that that bridge has been closed, they're not coming from the south through Scotia over to Rio Del.
That's not good when it comes to new businesses. What types of new businesses have sprung up?
So they've really been working on marketing it as a art-friendly town. So there's a new art gallery there that also helps run the Chamber of Commerce. They've put sculptures on Main Street, Wildwood Avenue, and they're calling it Avenue of the Sculptures.
Play on words.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So if I remember correctly, back in 2012, they had a 40% vacancy rate on Main Street. So 40% of those storefronts were vacant. And as of the first of this year, 2018, they had full occupancy, which is, you know, a big achievement.
That is huge.
And six of those new businesses, there was a boutique, a cafe, the Green Bean Cafe, a massage parlor, and a couple of other things. So six of them are brand new, and, you know, they're just starting to get their legs, and then, boom, the bridge closes down. And they say that they just saw, you know, trade in the town and traffic coming, you know, through the town almost completely stop.
On paper, this town should kind of be flourishing. I mean, like you said, the new businesses, I think the cannabis industry as well, right?
And that's right. Yeah,
so Eel River should be doing well. And then this one little thing happens and it just kind of, any kind of success is kind of stifled, right?
Well, it's difficult for them to tell exactly how much of an impact it's having because some of these businesses are so new. But one business owner I spoke to who's been there for 30 years says this is the worst impact he's ever seen. And this business owner, Jim Rich, he owns the Pizza Factory.
Yeah, that's like everybody likes. I mean, everybody talks about that when we talk about Rio Del.
And so he's 74, and he's gone back to working 16-hour shifts, 17-hour shifts, just to keep his business open, because he's had to lay off his employees. He hasn't been able to fill as many shifts. And he told me, frankly, that he's not sure how much longer he can do it. You know, he's got arthritis, like he should be retiring. So I spoke to Caltrans, and the way they explained it to me is closing the bridge was really an economic and a safety decision, because if they kept it open to one-way traffic, which they have done in the past, it would be costing taxpayers another $1 million or so just in labor. But closing it completely allowed them to finish the job in a more timely fashion. And then also, I guess, the last time that they closed it and left one lane open, there were some incidents with worker safety that they wanted to avoid. After speaking with business owners and I believe with the city government, they've improved their finish time, and it may be open as early as early August.
It's hard though for a lot of businesses, particularly restaurants. You know, you're not making ahead on cash. You don't have like a stockpile of cash that you're drawing from. You are making just enough to pay for the order that you've already placed, and so a month can be devastating to a business. 2 months can be devastating.
Especially a month of high traffic tourism.
Right, exactly.
That is definitely, it's going to other places.
Yeah, that's one of the things that a lot of business owners told me is that they really rely on the tourist trade in the summer, and they use that to make up for lack of traffic in the winter. And so some of them, they're just really counting on, you know, this tourist season to get them through the year.
Is Caltrans getting any kind of backlash, but are they also providing any kind of solutions for these businesses who say might have just opened and predicted a very profitable or somewhat profitable summer and are now struggling to stay alive?
Well, it's complicated. Caltrans, again, they've been speaking with businesses, they've been speaking with city government, and they've doubled up on the work so they can finish earlier. There's also a form a step that the businesses can take to recoup losses up to $10,000 each. And I know that some business owners in the Chamber of Commerce have gotten together to help business owners file those forms. For the new businesses, though, specifically the six that just opened this year, filing that paperwork is difficult because they would have to project their losses. They wouldn't really know actually how much money they're losing out on because they just opened.
Is there any light at the end of the tunnel or at the end of the bridge?
Well, again, it looks like they may open in early August, and that's just not really a rumor at this point. Caltrans is saying that they will probably finish in August, and everyone in town is hoping that they'll open before the first weekend of August, which is Wildwood Days. It's an annual celebration of the town. It's a 3-day festival and also a benefit for the local fire department. It's a lot of fun. So they're really hoping that they will reopen by then. That will be a big help.
Well, that sounds great. And, you know, optimistic. You know, I think you have to stay optimistic as a small town.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to double back to the cannabis thing. You know, I've been writing about Rio Del's economic progress a lot during my tenure at the Journal. And one of the things that's really interesting to me, I was writing earlier this year about the loss of sales tax revenue for some small towns and trying to track whether or not it was tied to cannabis legalization.
That's right. Didn't Rio Del have one of the higher sales tax in this area? They had like 9%. Everybody else had like 7 and 8.
I don't remember what the exact numbers are. You can find it on the North Coast Journal's website. I believe the title was A Tale of Two Cities, and it was about cannabis legalization. But I believe that they almost doubled their sales tax revenue over 2016 and 2017. And a lot of that was tied to a sales tax measure that they undertook, and then also encouraging small businesses. And then the city manager is really optimistic about work they're doing over at the Old River Sawmill site, which is actually technically in Rio Del's jurisdiction, but it's on the other side of the highway.
Okay.
And that's projected to be a cannabis distribution and manufacturing hub. And it seems like that might bring a lot of revenue into the city. So there's a lot of optimism around that.
The cannabis business, where it's been rejected, not rejected, but kind of seeing some kind of, I would say, bumping heads with a lot of people in Fortuna and in different cities. I know Trinidad came out with an ordinance where it doesn't allow certain things with cannabis. In Rio Del, it might actually find a happy home.
Well, it seems like they had kind of the perfect situation to establish that, because the Ill River Sawmill site is already an industrial site, and it's alongside a major two major highways, Highway 101 and State Route 36 is also close mm-hmm. by. And it's not near residential homes, and it's already zoned correctly, and it was unused. So they really had a good situation there, it seems, to create this distribution hub, and they really jumped on it.
Yeah, it sounds like it would work.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of love for Riodel. I've been covering it now for 3 years off and on, and whenever something happens down there, I'll usually get a text or a call from someone saying, oh, you got to cover what's going on in Riodel. Their city council meetings are fabulous. If you're a city council meeting nerd like me.
You're the only person who thinks any city council
meeting
Wow. Way to show you
difficult.
Way to show your nerd card.
It's true. They're tired of watching me watch city council meetings at my office. And
it's
yell.
Hilarious. She has headphones because she doesn't have a speaker on her computer, because that's the kind of high tech operation we're running. And, you know, we'll walk by her desk and she's like, well. And you're just like, what's going on? And she's like, she'll pull one headphone off her ear and go, city council meeting is lit right now. And we'll be like, yeah, it's probably not. But okay.
I don't know. I mean, they can get really interesting. I know Trinidad City Council is, I don't know if it's hit or miss. Sometimes, like, it lasts really long and you're like, wow, it's midnight.
They do get intense.
But yeah. Then, you know, there's sometimes when you go to a Eureka City Council meeting, you're like, all right, I am ready for this. I am mentally prepared mm-hmm. and physically mm-hmm. prepared. And then, you know, it's very short and nice and cordial. And I was like, what? I want you guys to fight. And they're not fighting. They're actually diplomacy, you know. So I think it just really has to do with what's on the agenda. But mm-hmm. I can imagine Riodel can be kind of slightly nicer, because you step out of the meeting, you're like, wow, I'm in a nice little town.
It is a nice little town, but their city council meetings bring out a lot of passion. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
Are there any guitars?
I have not seen anyone play mm-hmm. a guitar yet. And I just want to make a note that actually they're not being covered by Access Humboldt right now. So
really?
I've been getting all my information about Riodel City Council meetings via their meeting notes, which are also very juicy. But I would really love to see some video coverage of their city council meetings again.
I bet you would.
I think Riodel in general has all of this potential mm-hmm. and it has the energy. And, you know, it definitely has people wanting to bring Riodel back into the spotlight. And it's just another hurdle.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be another hurdle. I mean, it's also really heartening talking to people down there who are very invested in their community and they want to see it succeed. And one of the things that people have been doing a lot of is just encouraging their neighbors, you know, their coworkers to buy locally. That's one of the things that Caltrans did, actually, is they encouraged their workers to buy lunch in town. And it's really that region is kind of, you know, isolated. They don't have a major grocery store. There's Hobie's across at Scotia, which is great. I stop there a lot. But they are kind of isolated, and people do need to buy locally there to get most of their needs met. And a lot of small businesses have sprung up around that.
Yeah, if you're curious about Riodel, Wildwood Days would be a great time to go and check it out.
Absolutely. Support the local fire department.
Yeah.
Speaking of local businesses and just locals.
Yes, Jennifer, locals.
What can you tell us about what's in the magazine? The magazine.
That's all right.
What can you tell us about what's in the North Coast Journal this week?
Well, this week in the table talk section, our food column, we have the lovely Melina Savorovong, who grew up here in Humboldt, and she is writing about, like, it's a Venn diagram of all my interests overlapping. It's fantastic.
Wow.
She's writing about strawberries, specifically
the best flavor,
the
ever.
Best
and the best fruit.
And the best strawberries. It's the Seicho Farms stand. Mm-hmm. So if you've been to the Arcata Farmers Market and sometimes the Eureka Farmers Market, I've seen him there too, and you walk by and you just smell the strawberry, like the strawberry of your youth, the strawberry that you remember biting into when you were a little kid, like that strawberry, that intense candy-like strawberry smell, that's the Seicho Farm stand. And it has no bells and whistles. There's no decoration. There's no country kitsch. There's no shabby chic going on. It's just Chan Seicho sitting with crates and crates of strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
And Chan Se Chow, she interviewed him also. He's one of a lot of immigrants from Laos, refugees that came during and after the Vietnam War. And many of them settled here in Humboldt County. And he's one of the few farmers, but he runs his strawberry farm basically by himself. And she asked him, like, how did you learn to do this? You know, who taught you? And he said, nobody teaches you anything. You have to just learn yourself. And I had all kinds of, like, immigrant family feels from that. I was like, and I'll be real with you. He kind of looks like my grandpa. He's just this 70-year-old.
Can you just adopt grandpas?
I know. And he's just got this, like, stern expression. And then he smiles. And it's like, ah.
You know what? I kind of want to get him and the guy who owns the pizza factory together.
Right?
Yeah.
Strawberry pizza. That's like a trendy thing, by the way.
I heard it's a thing.
To talk about running their own businesses.
Really?
Yeah. Them and my dad. Yeah,
I really just
want
the strawberry
pizza. Who's also in his 70s. Just like, sit down, tell the kids what's up.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that's important. Yeah.
And yeah. Then, I mean, this guy just like works his fingers to the bone constantly. He should be retiring. He wants to retire someday. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's hard. And he's... she talks about how he hasn't been back to Laos for a number of reasons, and a lot of reasons that seem really common for a lot of Southeast Asian immigrants, particularly, you know, refugees and refugee families. And this is a time when I feel like it's important for us to highlight all the wonderful things that refugees contribute to our country. And Se Chow is just a great example of somebody who's just, you know, breaking his back working and, you know, giving us these amazing strawberries. And anyway, she writes about the strawberries, but she also includes a recipe. And this is another thing that I love because it's a recipe that's really easy, really simple. And in this day and age of like Food Network TV and Instagram, this morning I saw a donut cone sundae that had caramel syringes stuck in it. You know what? Stop it.
Diabetically delicious.
Yeah,
though.
Everybody stop. No more. No more, you know, cotton candy burritos. I'm done. Mm. I'm out.
I don't know if I'm insulted or intrigued.
I'm insulted. I'm hurt. And my insulin is spiking. So she just has this really simple macerated strawberry recipe. Mm. And so maceration, if you haven't heard the term before, is just like, yeah, because you're 10.
I'm 12.
You will not go blind, I can guarantee you. It is when you soak fruit or vegetables in, like, it's like marinating, but not meat. So it softens the thing and flavors the thing that you're soaking. Mm-hmm. So it's a really simple strawberries, a little sugar, balsamic vinegar, and a number of potential add-ins, including like chopped vanilla bean or a little black pepper, but all sorts of things that you could just a little pinch of it and it will just change the dish. And the other thing that's fantastic is about it, besides it being a really easy recipe and a simple recipe, because can we just learn to like eat food again? I don't even know how to eat anymore. There are syringes in my ice cream cone.
You know what?
Right?
It's true. It's true. I went to downtown Fullerton and I was just like, what? You're supposed to eat this?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, have you seen milkshakes lately?
Oh.
Milkshakes have 100.
What have they done to precious milkshakes?
Precious milkshakes are kind of, I'm sorry, I'm going off topic here, but it's like, you know how Bloody Marys have spears of 10,000 things sticking out of them?
Yeah.
So like now milkshakes have like a piece of cake on top of them and all kinds of.
I feel like they just don't want to waste a plate. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, just, you're going to take a picture of it, but can you eat it?
Can you eat it?
So back, I'm sorry.
Back
I digress.
To the simplicity of
the simplicity,
the food.
But it's also a great recipe for ugly fruit. So
Oh, you mean cosmetically challenged fruit?
Yes, cosmetic fruit that is made to feel bad by pictures of other fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So your strawberry that has to, I mean, come on. You like if you grew up growing vegetables, growing fruit, you had, you know, a plate full of food that your parents gave you that had nicks cut out of it. You had like half strawberries, like a weird little like 16th of a strawberry that your grandma saved from like wherever, whatever was eating on it, right? Bruised fruit, that's like barely like trembling, like just about to go bad. That fruit is perfect for this. You just take your beat up fruit, you slice it, and you toss it and let it sit for a bit, and it's lovely. It doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, you know, thrown out just because it has a bump or a bruise or a little brown spot or that's someone just living in it, you know. You
can just I don't know cut about it out. No, my family used to pick out all the like on sale fruit all the time because I didn't grow up with millions of dollars. You know, we grew up in San Bernardino County. For anyone who knows where that is, we're homies. But so, you know, I'd always like my grandma would always cut us pieces and she'd always say, you know, the uglier fruit tastes better because they want you to eat them.
Wow. I like that. Yeah. My family, we always grew our own vegetables and fruit and we would save the weird looking ones to show each other. So like <That's> every great. So often you get like carrots that are like conjoined twin carrots, you know.
I love the dancing carrot.
Oh yeah. My God. And so they would like stay in the fridge forever. And whenever someone came over, be like, look at this freaking fruit, which is kind of a waste. So yeah, I say eat your freaky fruit after a couple of days or so. Don't let it go away. Yeah.
Instagram
let
the
it
ugly
die
food.
With
don't
dignity.
Exploit it for company.
No, but that really resonates. Like the ugly fruit, or as I like to say, cosmetically challenged fruit.
Body dysmorphic fruit.
It's I mean, beautiful.
And I'm guilty of it too. You know, you go to the farmer's market and you look for the one basket of, you know, berries that are totally unblemished. I'm in Costco turning over the packaging to make sure there's nothing blemished. But, you know,
do the same with avocados. I mean, you're like, and then you get mad when it just overripens and you're just like, well, I can't use you now.
Yeah. But, you know, that's why it's important to have these recipes that are, number one, easy because you're actually going to do it. And also, you know, that don't waste food. I mean, come on.
I think that's the one of those things. Also, it kind of resonates with where he comes from, you know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you said he did come from Laos and it was a refugee situation, right?
Yeah. And so, we have a lot of people from, you know, we have Hmong, Lao, and Thai Mien people all living in Humboldt. And we actually did a cover story on it a couple months back.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's we have a lot, as I was talking to the people who were at the Lao New Year celebration. You know, so I'm a Japanese American and my Japanese culture is very different from Lao culture.
Yeah,
it's very different in a lot of ways. Even honestly, the form of Buddhism is really different in many, many ways. But some of those same kind of immigrant values and post-war values, like my grandparents and my mom, as we were growing up, we sort of grew up like kids of the Depression, you know, that idea of like waste not, want not was really serious. And anybody who's growing up or who's living post-war gets that same set of values put upon them and that same impulse to not waste anything, not take anything for granted, and to just work till you're dead. I mean, really. So it really talking to a lot of people at that celebration was like, wow, this is very much like my family, very much how I grew up. And, you know, the story of Chan Seichow is like a lot
it's
of people's,
like
right?
Yeah, it's, I feel like he resonates with a lot of immigrants who come here and are told you're only as successful as how hard you work. And it's, I mean, it has to do with a lot of people feeling like they need to be productive. And this is, you know, I don't think it's not just, you know, people of color, but it's anybody who's grown up with this mentality that, you know, productivity is where you're going to succeed. You can't, you know, you can't sit down, you can't be lazy. And I think that's just very, for lack of a better term, that's very American.
Yeah, respect the hustle.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for just telling me about the content this week. I appreciate it. And, you know, just kind of the contrast of the stories, hardworking and also hardworking.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate till we started talking about it how much they kind of align.
Yeah. I think a lot of people like to divide who's an immigrant, who was born on this side, who was born somewhere else. But I think we're all fighting for the same common goal, which is, you know, hard work. Hard work.
Yeah, we want to work.
That's
crazy.
That's Humboldt County, though. You know, like we have a crazy quilt of communities and people with all different backgrounds. But I think we have a lot of common values, and it's really rewarding to tell and to read stories about that.
Yeah. Think about that when you're making your macerated strawberries.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Right.